Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again in studio is Angel Bronskis and Sean Watkins. They own Investors Workshop in Orange County, and they've supported I Survive Real Estate every year, and we really appreciate that. And they have some 200 doors in Utah, Ogden. And welcome back. We just started talking about the club. How did you decide to have a club, first of all?
Pretty selfish reason, I think. I was going to Nick Manfredi's club, Inland Empire and Investors Forum. And Nick runs a terrific club out there. The problem is I lived in Orange County and had to keep commuting out to him. Mm-hmm. And anybody that knows the 91 freeway knows that if you don't get on the freeway by 2, you're not getting where you need to go till
very
dark.
Quickly. Yeah.
So I'd get on the road and I'd get out there and I'd whatever exit Cahalco there and sit there and nurse a nice tea forever. And after doing that for months and months and months, I finally walked up to Nick and I said, Nick, I want to start a club in Orange County, not because I don't like you. It's just too darn far. And actually modeled Investors Workshops off of the style of club that Nick had, you know, that he didn't pay his speakers and he had them, he picked them and started it in 2003 in Orange County, chiefly because, well, really, I got sick of getting home at midnight and having to spend 10 hours. I was trying to do it more efficiently is how it basically worked out.
That's an amazing commitment for what seems to be a small meeting. I get that too when I go speaking. Honestly, that's the same thing. You know, you realize, wow, this was a 1 day commitment. It was a 1.5 hour talk, but it took all day.
Yeah.
That's in San Diego or something.
Yes.
And you go, okay, well, some of it you just do because you love it. And I ultimately that's who ends up having great clubs is it just becomes a passion. 2003, I mean, go through 2006 and seven, there was probably a lot of interest is because there's nothing you could do that would mess up.
Yeah, any real estate you touch, you just had to be quick. You didn't have to be very smart. Get on, get in, hope that it fell out of escrow at least once so
exactly.
You could get a price increase,
that's right.
Net more at the end. And there was a lot of backslapping and congratulatory this. I tell you what, I never saw so many people buy so many other people drinks as I did during that time. It seemed like everybody had money and nobody was afraid to flash it. And everybody was showing their new cars in the parking lot.
You know, in that mindset, you're casual about decision process because you're blinded by the risk. It's absolutely a fact. Mm-hmm. And I did some of it. Everybody I know did some of it where you go, you know, I sent $250,000 to Mexico, you know, for, you know, it's not coming back. And it's one of those lessons I go, okay, I had to learn that one again. I should have read that, that book and whatever that book is I read once a year for money. Anyway, just one more lesson. And sometimes you have too many big chunks and you just go, okay, I won't, you know, babysit that one. Well, you know, owning a club in 2008 and 9 was a very different group sitting there. Probably a lot of damage and maybe a lot of absence of people.
Attendance flagged and the conversation started to become my voicemail and my email was filled with, do you know anybody that'll do a short sale? And it's funny because the last time those words were uttered were in the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The vocabulary completely is like it doesn't exist for a generation. And we had quite a run. So from 98 up until 2006, 2007, REO department, you could have people not even know what that was. And a short sale is even like more remote than that.
Yeah.
So
you had investors basically trying to figure out how to cut bait. We've got multiple properties in multiple cities, multiple states. You know, the stories that you've told and that Mike Cantu have told about being loaded up with subdivisions and properties and looking at it and having to make a very hard decision. The stories were so overwhelming. I mean, when somebody comes up to you and says they've got 30 houses in 5 different states and none of them are worth even close to what's owed, you know, what do you say to that? It's clearly, I can see it's making them sick physically, mentally. It's hard because you don't want to be the guy that says
it's over,
let it go.
Yeah,
but you are, because
this round is over.
Yeah, nobody else is willing to tell them that.
Yeah,
and gee, after all, you have a real estate club, so you must only know how to do it right.
I'll be honest with you, I think that's a very valuable experience to sit in that seat once in your life, because it gives you a perspective that you wouldn't have sitting across from somebody that's there, because it's not a permanent position. You will get a chance to own again. Life will return to normal, et cetera, right. But it's not going to happen inside of the next 6 months.
Right.
So make a decision that takes you off of the pressurized seat you're on, because it's no fun getting certified mail, and give yourself a break. I mean, you were a renter before. You can be a renter for a while. And I think if you just give people permission to go back there and have that awe moment where you don't have to have that stamp of I own something, which is, you know, kind of a badge of important.
Well, permission. Permission was such a great word you just used. That's perfect. That's exactly the word I've been searching for, is they wanted permission from somebody to feel the way they were feeling.
Yeah.
Well, and being willing to have that face-to-face, we wouldn't necessarily do it always at the club, but have that face-to-face conversation with somebody one-on-one, you're willing to have that uncomfortable conversation with them, and they're going to be more the apt to tell you really the things that are going on. Because it's not just those 20 houses they own in 20 different states. There's other things going on, and they're willing to tell you that. And once you broach that and you offer them solutions and conclusion, things that you can help them stay afloat, then you create this trust. And so at our club, the people that go to our club that are members are people that know, like, and trust us. And that's that's very apparent. They stay. They've stuck, you know.
When you have that experience personally and you sit across from a person that owns a house and they're about to make a wrong decision because they don't want to sell it too low or on terms, but the other choices are, I'm leaving – I'm going to send my family to, or they're going to stay here, and I'm going to go to North Dakota.
Yeah.
And see, then you really have some ammunition that's legit, and go, you know, you ought to reconsider that. I think honestly, there wouldn't be a decision I'd make for my family, because here's why. And you really can get stronger than you probably ever would, because you realize you're really trying to help this person, not compound.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what we have a tendency to do, is double up. So, for instance, like when penny stocks were doing bad. My first reaction, instead of selling everything while I still had a profit, was to buy more, so my cost was less. I always thought – now, after thinking about that, I always think that they call it leveraging down.
Right.
Leveraging down is lowering your cost on the worst decision you've made in the past. Wouldn't it be smarter to go, let's make a new intelligent decision on the best investment in the future? But then you still stuck with the evidence that you owe this stock at too high a price.
Yeah.
So let's own twice as much of it and at a lower price. That's genius. That's a stock salesman.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what people do in real estate. They really feel that I messed up here, but then there's a guy that I know that sells bulk homes in Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. 20 at a time for $100,000. He has mostly California investors buy them. Mm-hmm. And it's stuff that's worked out for him, you know, but his disclosure is rather hilarious. Number one is the home may no longer exist. So you're buying them on a pile. So there's this spectrum of damage that's going to happen a certain percentage of the time. The home may no longer exist. Number two is, if it does exist, it may have city and tax liens on it exceeding its value. Does anybody go see the houses?
Uh-uh. No, of course not.
Why? Because they're trying to make up for the damage over here by the super deal. Obviously, it's going to work out at $5,000 a pop. And it's like, nah, maybe not.
That's what I've seen over the last few years. I watch people's business model, and I look at what they were buying 4 years ago. Well, it has to be deeper than that. In 06, 07. And that made sense. And I've watched and I've listened. The ones that have been, you know, gracious enough to tell me. So, wow, how come your margin has shrunk so much? And really, their honest answer is, I mean, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
If I want that deal, I'm going to keep buying because the margins are lower, but eventually they'll get better again. And my question is, what makes you think they're going to get better if you spend more now? It's almost the same analogy. They're going to buy more now, you pay more for it so they can be in the game later. I've said, well, have you thought about doing something in real estate, but something a little different? so that you're not, you don't have so much exposure. They really haven't.
Yeah. Well, and first of all, I don't completely discount the fact that you stay in the game, and because we're evidence of a company that's had to pay higher prices than I thought we would have to, but you also understand when the shifts happen, and you sometimes control the numbers. But having said that, I also have a complete set of that other stuff you're talking about that makes those decisions not have to be made in a negative fashion.
Well, and the thing is, Bruce, I'll use the Norris Group as an example when I talk to these people, and I'll say, do you think that you can outlast the Norris Group? Unless you're better funded and better trained than them, they're not going to. That's a legitimate statement by me to them to say, you're a bit player in this game, and you cannot withstand a shift down. The Norris Group and groups, well, there's no one really on par with you guys I know of.
Yeah, there are.
I mean, I know a couple, but that aren't as visible, Bruce.
Yeah,
that aren't
true.
As willing to share.
Yeah, no,
what
that's
they're
different.
Doing.
Yeah, that's very
because
different.
You're going to say, look, we're willing to take a hit on margin because we're not willing to give our properties away. We'll become property managers for a while and go 8 or 10 years in the future. That's what I'm saying is they're comparing their ability to last.
Yeah.
They don't have it. In other words, they cannot the one little blip and they're done.
Well, what's interesting, and I just want to make sure that like on the properties we kept most of those, and this is a wise decision in the buy-sell business, is you have both alternatives be mm-hmm. perfectly acceptable.
Absolutely.
You know, the scary part is, you know, someone would call Craig, let's say, even now with, you know, I have this really hot deal with a 750 grand house in Riverside. No way.
Right.
There's no way I can tell you you're going to get out of that, and there's no way you're going to cash flow if you don't.
Now, the scariest thing is if they went to the Norris Group, and I'll say, you know, to be fair, any other group that had the same standards, you'd be intellectually honest enough to tell them our money's not going to follow that deal.
Yeah.
What happens is they use their own money. They use family money. They use money from people close to them, and they are standing on a pressure mine. And in their mind, if they step off, they blow up. And if they stay on, they blow up. But it just takes longer.
Yeah.
So they die a death of 1,000 cuts.
Yeah.
They get bled out. Over time, they can't move off it, they can't buy anything else, and they can't exit it. In their mind, that's it.
Well,
but the alternative is the rental business, which, you know, like you said before, it's not sexy. $150 a house is not sexy.
But you see, they didn't buy that with any plan B. Plan A is plan A. And if they step off that plan A, they lose a limb. And sometimes the answer is, okay, lose one limb rather than lose everything.
Well, and Angel, we're going to go to where you're going in just a second, but during the 2004, 5, and 6, there was almost none of that possible in California.
Right.
But it was just an escalation game. And it was valid to play because everything you touched was going to make 50 to 100 grand. It's when you didn't catch the turn. I remember meeting with a guy who was honestly one of the big speakers for one of the popular guys who was telling everybody to buy all over the world and, you know, all of the country, basically. And he had an 8x11 sheet of his 62 properties. And it was really his business card. Hi, I'm this guy. And you would look at it, and this was, wow. Except for you looked at the cash flow, and it was minus 15 grand a month.
Oh.
And he had $4 million of worth. So he had $12 million of debt and $4 million of net worth, all of the properties in Florida and California.
Yeah.
And he came to me because he had heard me speak about this is going to change and go down, and it scared him. And he wasn't exposed to that conversation. So we had lunch. And I looked at his list, and he said, you really scared me that night. I said, in my opinion, you have 6 months, period. 6 months to turn this into what's going to cost you $2 million to sell the stuff and commission and stuff. So you have $2 million in net worth, you can pay taxes, and you walk away being a millionaire. If you wait 6 months, it'll be zero. If you wait a year, it'll be minus $4 million.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to make those decisions.
Yeah.
But preventing that damage going forward now is possible because you can choose an area and a type that both of those decisions, either to buy, sell, and buy and hold, can come in the same property at the same moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if one doesn't work, you can go, okay, well, then I'll just keep this. Now, honestly, we don't usually ever buy a property now with the thought of keeping it If we make a mistake buying and selling, we're just going to eat the mistake. But again, that has to do with the size of the volume.
Exactly.
So you have a stinker, one that's every 20 out of 100 properties, who cares? But if you're only buying four, you go and care.
Yeah.
And then it starts, especially if it's
25% of your business, just eat
it. And that happens. Of course it does, because you know it's not always in your control. Sometimes the appraisal. You know, you have some very strange things happen. You go, you gotta be kidding me. Well, yeah, it does hurt people. Now, the area that you're buying in, it cash flows, and mostly because, again, the ownership group that would occupy it isn't that excited about owning, so they don't care about paying more to rent, and they'd like that flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron is talking to me about this, the Y generation, actually. And oddly enough, he talks to me about that is how they're built. That they don't necessarily need roots of owning a home. They want the flexibility of going to the next job market. And I really have to look into that, because that's a big shift, right? I mean, the way we used to real estate is you camp out on an ownership of a property and there you stay, and then maybe move up, but it's usually in that area. And that's what you start out. You know, when you get married, you think, or you go to college, the whole idea is we're going to set aside money and buy a house. And what if that's new and not going to be replicated? That's an interesting thing.
Absolutely.
The education side of your business, when did that start to emerge as, you know, maybe we should do that? And what's neat about it is you're really kind of taken on subject matter that no one else has.
Absolutely.
And that's been it's been a big help, because you have very experienced people in there going, wow. And that's hard to do in the education space, but you guys have done that.
Well, it's very hard to do even within the education space, because people, it's usually one of the last things investors learn. They start using their cash, they use family's cash, they use all their credit, and then eventually they can't build a career on the extent of what they can do. They have to learn how to buy in a creative way. You have to learn how to buy in a way where the seller is participating in the transaction one way or another, whether it's a subject to or strictly a seller finance free and clear home. They have to learn to have those kind of conversations, because they will not grow an empire. They won't be able to quit their day job on just the extent of what they have. And most people don't even have a lot to start with.
Yeah, well, and especially during a time where no one wants to finance investors. And
right.
One of the reports I recently read, and I don't think we've talked about this because it's just something I read really recently, the New York Federal Reserve Board came out with a report, and what they did was if the chart said the tale of two groups of investors, basically, okay? And you have a chart that meanders its way up from 6 to 15%, and that's the percentage of properties that when they filled out the loan app, raised their hand and said, I am not going to live in it. Okay. Then there's another, on the same chart, there's another chart that meanders its way up to 50%. And this is the percentage of foreclosures caused by people. And 50% of them are multiple grant deed owners. Mm. So what happened was these people, the other 35, didn't say they were going to be non-owner occupants on their loan app. But now they figured out that in California, half of all the foreclosures have been caused by multiple property owners.
Right.
So the odds of getting financing after that report, you know, I don't know how you'd pull it off. I don't know how you'd go to Congress and say, well, these guys really weren't responsible for a lot of the damage. And that's a speculator that was doing that, not an investor. But it's going to lend a lot of credence to the stuff you're talking about, because it's going to be how to own a lot of properties, unless you're just richer than Midas, because you're not going to get financing. I don't care who you are.
Even the 10 loans that are available to people, you have to have so much backing. I mean, the people I know that are getting those are people, high income earners, that continue to stay in their job to get those 10 loans and then have all this financial backing sitting there behind every single house. It's like, you know, a genie.
It's not even a model the lending wants. That was one of the things when we went back to Washington, D.C., is that we were meeting with Fannie Mae going, you know, why doesn't this make sense to you? Because we had that $15 million portfolio of loans that was perfectly current, and said, this is a 9.9%. You guys are worried about this group, and you're going to loan them at 5. You know, you're not making – that doesn't make any sense to me. And literally they came up and just said, literally no one wants the model. We've talked about it. No one wants the multi-owner, because the loan app has got to be figured almost like a commercial loan in the process. It's sort of not part of the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this the factory only wants to produce single family loans that are owner occupied and everyone else, meh. And if you can't place the loan, well, then why originate it? And that's really what becomes the problem and the overlays of other lenders, you know, where you go, okay, well, Fannie Mae will do this, but then the lender goes, yeah, but, and they start piling on other things. So fortunately, you know, we're in a time where probably 75% of the mortgages in America are 5% or less interest for the first time in history.
Right.
And going forward, and I'll just mention like California, you've got a lot of negative equities that are going to keep making their payments and emerge at that break-even point for a long time in the future.
Right.
And this niche of, can I take that off your hands, is smart for both people. It's sort of like the hard money loan business right now, where you have an investor that buys a house that cash flows and you have an investor that wants 9% on the trust deed. Smart decisions are on both sides of that table. Mm-hmm. Well, if I owe 120 grand at 5% and I just got transferred to Texas on a job, my choice is I'll write a 12 grand check to accomplish a closing and pay payments while it's listed, or somebody could come along and say, I'll take that and I'll enjoy a cash flow. Mm-hmm. And the lender is this beneficiary of a non-threatening transaction because they're much less likely to have a foreclosure.
Absolutely.
And somehow that's not supposed to be allowed.
Well, that's the thing of educating people on this is mostly difficult because everything that we're talking about is based in 100 years of law. It's happened before people had large banks. They dealt with one another. You might give somebody $10 in valuable consideration and what? Some chickens or a horse or, you know, we used to do meets and bounds. We used to do legal descriptions and you go back and, you know, I'm a geek for title like you are for stats. And, you know, your boundary is the old oak tree and the big rock. Mm-hmm. Well, those aren't there anymore. And you've had to kind of, you know, evolve. So when we're talking about educating people on what a trust deed actually is, what a note is, legal descriptions and how these things work, you're right. They think you're doing some kind of voodoo, but you're not. You're saying, did you actually give money to the seller? No, you traded documents. And if those documents are proper and if those documents are in order, there's no reason why you can't do that right now. It's just not what the factory puts out. Mm-hmm. So you're fighting this headwind and we just keep doing it and trying to teach from a base of practical knowledge. We're doing 7 or 8 a week. These things are coming, just constantly coming, coming, coming. When you're doing that kind of volume, it's not hard to stack a list of examples and say, well, clearly you can do this. We get title insurance. We go through all the hoops. We're not trying to hide anything.
Yeah, there's nothing illegal. It might be against the lender policy, but the lender policy is going to ensure they have more damage than necessary, oddly
Absolutely.
Enough. There was a realtor that we just had in here 2 days ago and doing interview. And during the 90s, a niche that no one else wanted is he would do wraps and he would do deed in, what do you call it? When
AITDs.
AITDs, but the other one where you don't transfer title.
Contract sale.
Contract sale.
Or installment
he
sale.
He was so busy because he was the only realtor that thought that one out. He had a legal background and he says, you know what? I think it's worth the risk. We're only a minute and a half. Where are you finding these deals or how are they finding you?
You know, particularly what we've done is we put the word out to local realtors on the MLS because we look at stagnant inventory. We'll do mailers to owners of free and clear houses. We bought the list off of DataTrace, and that's in California and in Utah. And the call rate is phenomenal. And it all comes back to personal referrals is where the number one source right now is. I'm getting calls from people. We just got a call from a builder. Local builder has got great prices and has offered to lease the house from you that you currently own if you buy a new one. As soon as I saw that, I inserted myself and said, well, why do that? Just sell it to me on contract. The builder's lender, who they own, sat down with us, looked at the documents, gave us the blessing, and now I've got this constant stream of people who are trying to build a new one, and the sales agent's like, buy this one, here's this one, this one. And so when I show up to that, I'm like, so Lonnie called you? Yeah, sign right here. What do you owe? What's your payment? Maybe as soon as I verify it, we'll go to escrow. Okay. That's Lonnie's new best friend.
That's pretty cool.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting that you turn this into a multi-transaction deal. And that's some of the key is of being successful is not having to do them one at a time. Sean and Angel, thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.